Welcome to Horangi Cybersecurity's Ask a CISO podcast. Come with us as we take a deep dive behind the scenes with the world's top cybersecurity leaders to get insights into security issues you care about. Before we take off, please help us grow by taking just a few seconds to like and subscribe to the podcast on YouTube, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts, and leave us a review letting us know what you think of the podcast and how we can improve.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Ask a CISO podcast, powered by Horangi. I'm Rafael Pere, the Vice President of Product here at Horangi, and I'll be presenting our podcast this week. Before I introduce our guests, please don't forget to like and subscribe or follow us on YouTube, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts to help us grow. With me today is Patrick Hinds and Duane LaFlotte. Patrick and Duane are hosts of the Security This Week podcast that you can find wherever you go to find your podcasts, and also the CEO and CTO of Pulsar Security. They have a combined 50-plus years of experience in cybersecurity and technology and have provided security services to people like Disney, the U.S. military, so hugely different sides of the spectrum, as well as large corporates like Bank of America, NHL, and a lot more.
Not as different as you'd think, actually.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah, they're pretty much the same organization.
Well, Disney and the military. We're going to hear about the underbelly of all of the Disney movies we know and love. Welcome, guys. Thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, it's great. Thank you for having us. And you know, I want to appreciate the fact that you said my last name right. It's French, and most people get it wrong. I get a lot of LaFlotte, so I'm impressed. Oh. I'm impressed.
Well, that is true. It definitely sounded French. So what's the connection there? Are you a hidden Frenchie?
No, my grandparents came from Canada. New Hampshire is like bordered with Canada, so it's not far for you know, for us to come down here. So it's good.
So do you actually know what it means?
I don't. No.
It means la is the, and flotte is either slang for water.
Oh.
Or like flotilla, as in the
navy.
The navy. Yeah.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. So, welcome. For those that don't know, I am French, so I can make fun of the Frenchies as much as I like.
Me too, apparently. Yeah. Oh, well, yeah. Irish, you're okay.
Yeah. Okay, so we're in the company of Europeans, right? Although most of the world could probably at some point or another, you know.
Yeah, everybody came through Europe one way or another, probably.
That's true.
Okay, let's get started.
Where do you want to go?
So... best anecdote regarding cybersecurity.
Yeah. So if you're looking for stories, we have lots of stories. We've seen it all in pen tests. Some of the interesting things we find, people don't think of things like IoT. We were even talking to our co-host on our podcast, and he was like, I don't have any IoT at my house. It's fantastic. And I was like, wait, what? Like, in 2023, you have nothing.
Thermostat. Connect, like,
yeah. I was like, what about your TV? He's like, well, I got a TV. I was like, is it a tube TV? He's like, no, it's not a tube. It's connected. I was like, okay, cool. Is it connected to the internet? You get Netflix? And he's like, yeah, of course I get Netflix. Everybody gets Netflix, right? And I was like, okay, so that's an Android TV, and it's streaming from the internet. It's IoT, right? And it's just people don't think about it, but we found one of our customers. We ran into a situation where they were trying to keep us out of a network.
Oh, they were being jerks. They were being jerks. They kept changing the Wi-Fi.
Yeah, password. The Wi-Fi password every 24 hours. They would change the Wi-Fi so we wouldn't break in.
As in, like, manually?
Yeah, oh yeah, but it was they'd a wireless go in, test. Change the password.
Oh,
yep. It was a wireless.
That's
test.
Nasty because who would ever do that in like nobody, production? Right? Like your employees exactly. would kill you.
Well, they paid absolutely. For it. Yeah,
so needless to say, the first day we were able to crack their password. I mean, we have a crack cluster at the office that can guess 3 billion passwords a second. So I can grab a handshake from a wireless network, guess 3 billion passwords. We were able to break in the first day. And we found that they had a TV on the network. And we were lobby. Able to break. Yeah, we were able to break into the lobby TV, put a piece of code on there so that it reached out to our website and gave us the password for the wireless every day. So every day they'd change it when they added the TV back on, we would get the password. And they were like, we've had these really long passwords, really complex. How do you guys keep breaking in? We're like, you stop being diligent.
They were spending more time than you guys were. That's the brilliant
exactly.
thing.
Right. Yeah, it'd take them half a day to add all the devices again. It was beautiful. So yeah, those are always fun antics. But
and what's the most uncommon way you've found of breaking in?
Uncommon way. That's that's an interesting one, because we see in the news a lot of people talk about, like, you know, the weird, oh, I dropped a USB stick in the parking lot and huzzah, you know, I got in. And I don't know if you've seen these OMG cables Hack 5. Yeah, those are awesome, right?
Dropping indistinguishable from a safe cable.
Yeah, those are fantastic. So they look, you know, for the listeners who haven't seen these, they look exactly like an iPhone lightning charging cable. They feel like one. They're the same color. But when you go to plug it into your computer, it does all sorts of magical things. It has the ability to spin up a wireless access point right in the USB connector. So you can connect to it over wireless and then start watching. You can even exfil data. It opens up a HID port. It starts pulling data off the computer and transmitting it. There's all sorts of really cool stuff you can do with that. Yeah. So we've definitely used a lot of those tactics. Sadly enough, to break into most organizations, it's a lot of the basic stuff. all right, I'm going to tell one story. We had one customer. We were doing a pen test, and we were supposed to simulate a normal user. So they gave us a user account. We were on the network, and they said, "See if you can get domain admin." So domain admin access to everything, right? And we're scanning around real sort of quiet, like, and we find a printer, and we look at the printer and we start playing around with the printer default password, because it's a printer, right? Who cares?
IoT.
We noticed the printer had the ability to send email, because it would connect into a mail server. If you scan something, you could email it to yourself. And the email that the server was routing off of was internal. So we then routed off that same server internally and sent an email to the IT staff and said, hey, you know, from the head CISO, and said, hey, can you just make this user's account a domain admin? It's needed for some testing. And they, sure enough, they just added us to the admin group. We were like, okay, well, that was hard. That was 15 minutes. So yeah, so it's some of the simple stuff. Yeah. Social engineering is just crazy.
It's tough when you're on the receiving end of that, because it's really, I mean, sure, there are sometimes it's kind of obvious, but sometimes it's really difficult to spot, and you're focused on doing your job, you know, like phishing.
Well, that's all social engineering
works.
Too. It's social engineering, and that's all this was. It was a social engineer. It was a phishing email, really, but it came in a way that was completely undefended.
Right,
because
it came from
inside.
It was inside the house. Yeah. So nobody knew.
So what's the recommendation in that case? Stop considering things to be trusted just because.
Well, you got to know your surface area. So it's. I think it comes down to surface area. Like when I'm preparing a presentation for how to keep kids safe on the internet, and Dwayne's helped me, you know, put that together, which I think is a really important topic as well. And one of the things is you have to know thy network. You have to know what the device is. So you buy a device and you put it on the network. What features does it have on by default? Do you want them on by default? Most of us are just so happy to have it working, and we move on to the next thing. And network administration is always barely keeping up with all the demand. And the problem is that leads to setting things up with the default setup, making things easy, and convenience is equal to insecurity. Convenience breeds insecurity, or is insecurity. So that's probably the key thing. And almost everything we find could be fixed by patching, configuration review, and making sure that configurations, shutting things off, closing surface areas. One of the most paranoid customers we ever had, and we haven't had them for years, but probably 15 years ago, they didn't let people send emails.
Yeah,
they had to send
crazy.
Emails to a central person who would retype them on a separate system and send them. They sent about, for 400 employees, they sent about 15 emails externally a day.
That was
because
nuts.
It was such a hassle. And yeah. yet they had a test system connected to the production network accessible from the internet. And that's how we got in.
Yeah.
And it's so, it's, and it,
it's an air gap, except there's like a big door on the side.
Exactly.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. And we felt bad because the guy brought us in was the one who had the server.
The developer who had this server multi-homed on. Like, we're like, yeah.
But you know, he was happy that we found the problem, but they lived and breathed it. And part of that is you have to get people who aren't you to look at your stuff. If you've ever written a paper or a presentation, it's always better when someone else looks at it because they can see your flaws that you don't see. And the same this is true in spades with cyber, because you don't think you just see a printer. Yeah, oh yeah, it's a printer. And then we look at it in an evil lens, and right. it's like, oh no, maybe that's a vector. Maybe we can get in. Has it been patched? When's the last time you patched your printer? When's the last time you patched your TV?
Mm. Right? Actually, the TV. So
it's now starting to force you to do it.
I worked on security on Android.
Ooh, oh, there you go.
TV had an ADB exploit.
No. Oh, you're kidding.
That's how we connected
So for those that don't know, ADB is the Android Debug Bridge, which is how you kind of can administer, if you're building for Android or Android.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. So I was working on Android Enterprise to make Android more kind of enterprise friendly and stuff like, we launched stuff like network logging on Android devices and some pretty cool, cool features.
Very cool. See, now I'm going to torture you a lot about Android.
It's been a while. Hopefully I'll have deniability. Oh, these are features that launched post my time.
That's awesome. Yeah, that TV that we were talking about had an ADB. It was a weird ADB exploit that it said that the ADB port was turned off because you have to turn on debugging on Android devices so that port is available. But for some reason, when the TV first came up, the port was active, but it said it was off in the interface. And we were like, oh, this is perfect. Where we could then hit the port, start putting code on there to have it beacon back out to us. Yeah, that's very cool.
Oh, that's brilliant. Brilliant. So one of the things that I find really interesting in what you're sharing is kind of there's always this tension, or there, at least this perceived tension in security of, either, to be safe, it needs to be horribly impractical. And this is kind of the example you were saying about the guy that's retyping the emails, or even like changing the Wi-Fi password every day and then having to manually kind of like type it in. And if you've tried typing something into a TV, like a nightmare, right? Like, so they were going to a lot of effort. And thinking that that there's a trade-off. What do you make
so
of that?
So I relate that to the physical world because we've all made it past our teens, me many times over, and so everyone's an expert in physical security unless they're a child, or childlike. You know when to lock your doors. You probably lock your doors. I don't lock my doors at my house because getting in my house isn't the problem. Getting out is. I've got dogs, guns, swords, everything. If I had killer bees, that would be the coup de grace. But I'm also in a place that's got very low crime. I've got a lot of property. I've got cameras. So all of us makes decisions every day about our physical security, whether we, how much cash we bring with us, whether a woman carries a pocketbook a certain way, because we make those decisions, those calculations naturally. We don't do them in the technical world naturally, but it's the same thing. There's no absolute security. If you go outside your house, and actually if you even stay inside your house, a meteor could hit you. There are tornadoes, at least
a
in America.
State
weather
come at you,
weather
yeah.
tends to kill you in America more than almost anywhere else. But we take risks every day, and we understand those risks. The problem is we take risks every day in computing, but a lot of times people don't understand they're taking risks. And so we just need to bridge that gap because there's no such thing as absolute security physically, and there's no such thing as absolute security in the technology world. Now, we've gone against organizations that there is no purchase. There is just no way to get in. Mm-hmm. Now, short of like kidnapping someone's family, and they never let us do that.
Yeah, which is crazy, right?
You know, it's this killjoys. No, just kidding. But you know, those are like some. You know, we've encountered that in some cases in the military. But there's so many targets that if I went to my neighborhood, I'm sure I could find a house that didn't have dogs, that didn't have guns, didn't have anybody home, didn't have cameras. There's always targets available. And we hear the news about, well, this company got hacked and this company got hacked. And we find out this company didn't have patches, or they left on accounts for people who they fired, or, you know, they just do other things. It's kind of like looking at how many people get killed in car accidents. We're immune to it. There's 135,000. I think it's 2 million people die a year in car auto accidents around the world.
Something like that. Yeah.
But we don't panic every time we get in our car. But people panic about this stuff. So I'm not saying we should stop worrying about it. I'm saying is we should get some cyber seat belts, and yeah, we should obey the cyber speed limit. Thou shalt patch every week. And there's certainly things we can do. And the difference between the super hackable, like the ones we go into, and 20 minutes later we're like, okay, now what do? And those that we would beat our heads against the wall for months and still not be able to find purchase, is that they pay attention to their inventory, their systems, and they're constantly reviewing them. They're constantly looking at, okay, it's been a month, let's look at all of our procedures. Where are our assumptions? If you can squeeze out the assumptions, you can be incredibly secure on the cheap. Because the printer, if someone had said, okay, it's my job to go through the whole inventory, we got printers, what could printers do? And then they look into it, or get a company like us to look into it, they'd find those problems. And this company, like we said, they did find that problem because we told it to them, and we didn't like steal all their stuff, which was good.
That was a bit of a rant,
but does that track?
I know. Yeah. No, I think it makes sense. Yeah.
Okay.
I think one of the things that you know, you made a really good point of everybody gets the physical security side of it. I think what we find is that although a lot of people are extremely comfortable with technologies these days, they don't really have a good grasp of where risk really lies. The perceived risk and the real risk is just completely separate, right? Which I find is one of the problems. You know, it's like even network administrators or, you know, saying you need to change your password every 3 months. And then, and you talk to people, and they're like, "Yeah, my password
at one
now." Exactly. And so I'm on iteration 24. I heard this earlier today.
Right? Oh wow!
banking, right? Trading, and it's like, yeah, I know. We need to change it all the time. Like, how else am I going to remember it? Right. And the reality is that there is another way of remembering it, which is the Post-it. And again, I have seen. And maybe some of you probably have. You're walking around, you're at a coffee shop, and you see someone with their laptop open, having a meeting, and at the bottom of the laptop, there is password. Password. Oh, and you're like, there's so many levels. So, unless it was a joke, which would have been pretty funny.
Yeah. Sure.
But I seriously doubt it was. It was like this little like paper.
One out of 100,000 times, it's a joke. But the rest of the time, it's
rare. It's mostly real. Yeah. Yeah, and when it's funny you say that because even you start making you're going to change your password every 3 months, and I'll tell you, I'm telling the listeners right now, password. Seeing we're on passwords, we hackers follow the trends, right? So if the trend is every 3 months you change your password, I am going to try summer 2023 this summer. I'm going to try fall 2023 this fall. Because everybody realizes, oh, there's four seasons, and I have to change my password four times a year, and now I can just use the season and the year. So if that's your password, like, change it. If you keep iterating at the end with a digit, change it. if you're in an Asian market,
use a dictionary word.
Oh my God! If you use a please don't use a dictionary.
Well, let's talk.
No matter how crafty you think you are.
So you probably know, but I'm not sure the listeners know about how passwords are attacked. Can we talk about that for a second?
So, actually, to ensure that, you must know the XKCD
little Bobby tables
around passwords, which is after, I think it's something like after 15 years, we have successfully trained humans to create passwords that are really difficult to remember and really easy to hack, right? So,
yes.
Which is so true. So, tell us about passwords.
So let me do this. So, let's say I get a hash of your password, and that those are easy to come by. They're usually.
The tactics to get hashes.
Yeah, so let's talk about an easy one to get. Let's say you have a Wi-Fi in a public place, but it's a corporate Wi-Fi protected with a password, with a good password, nice long, 10-character password. So you get a password on it, and you're protected. Your wireless network is protected. Well, anyone in range, so anyone with a drone or anyone on the street in many cases.
Or a Yagi antenna or a Canon.
Can get that handshake. That handshake happens all the time. Every time a device comes and reconnects to it, a handshake happens and the hash is exposed. But the hash is not reversible. And that's the developers take great pride in that. The hash is not reversible. They're not getting the password. They're just getting the hash. So we take that hash and we put it into our crack cluster. Now, we have 40 video cards, like $2,000, $3,000 video cards. So this isn't your average hacker. But even someone with a laptop can do a lot of what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we take that and we put it in a program, and we're doing what's called an offline brute force attack. So we take our password list, which is, I think, 8.4 billion passwords.
I think it's at 12 now.
Is it 12? Okay. It's compiled based on real passwords gotten in breaches over the last 10 years. So these are passwords people use, like summer 2023, and every word in the English language
and
every
some of them
word
are long.
In the Spanish language. Some of them are very long. Some of them are 30, 40, 50 characters long. But because they're in the dictionary, in 4 seconds, we're going to try all of them. So if your password is on that list, it's going to take us 4 seconds max if it's in that list exactly. If it's not in that list, it might take us an hour if it's based on or similar to those.
Yeah.
So, for example, Dwayne noticed when we were dealing with some of our Asian customers, and since you guys are based in Singapore, we want to advise, don't just use numbers.
Oh my gosh, numbers are fantastic. They're fantastic for me when I'm trying to break in.
So we found that in some countries in Asia, 80% of the passwords we saw were all numbers. Really lowers. So that means in if you use varied cases, then a 12-character password is much more secure than a 12-character password that's all numbers. A 12-character password that's numbers and letters and that stuff is more secure than a 15-character all numbers password, or about as secure.
And to take that a little to the math, like let's say I had a 12-character password, and it took me, or let's say I have a 12-character password, and it takes us let's say 11 characters for us to brute force every possible upper, lower, maybe we just do lowercase, A through Z. So for us to brute force 11-character password, it takes a day. Well, for us to add the 12th character to brute force, it's now going to take 26 times a day, right? Because we have to try all of the ones we've tried before with all of the new character combinations. So just with lower cases, we're now looking at 26 days. Now, if we want to go to 13 characters, it's 26 times that, right? So now we're looking upwards of over a year and a half, 2 years. So it quickly, exponentially starts to go up relatively quickly. But let's say you're in an Asian culture, and I know culturally, a lot of the phrases sound like numbers. So a lot of people, like Patrick had said, use 100% numbers. So let's say I'm now back at that, 11 characters. Well, that 11 characters, if it's just numbers, is going to take me half the time because there's not 26 of them. There's only 10. So now I'm looking at, instead of a day, it's only 12 hours for me to guess the 11 characters. And then when I want to move to that 12th character, at this point, it's now just 10 times the amount of times. Now I'm looking at it like a day and a half. So you can see that because the entropy is so small, like it starts to get really easy for us to guess 12 characters, 13 characters, 14 characters, 15 characters, because it's only numbers. But that was the other thing that was unique culturally, depending on which customers we're dealing with, a lot of number passwords. You got to avoid those. Yeah. Number passwords and seasons. Don't use any seasons.
Unless you want to go 20 characters. 20 characters, do whatever you want.
And every customer I've ever pen tested has the password welcome one. If you ever want to break into a company, that should be the first password you try. After password, then try welcome and the number one. Probably get in anywhere.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Don't you ever put that? I often put the exclamation mark at the end. You know, just for those.
Yes.
You're giving away our secrets.
I know, right?
Sorry.
So the exclamation. So, all right. So it's amazing how many people are like. And it's funny when we have a password talk where we play this video, and this guy's like, you know, they asked for this special character, and
as a comedian,
this whole list of special characters, and we all stopped at the exclamation point and said, yes, this is what I need, because we all use the exclamation point as like a huzzah. They'll never guess that,
yeah,
and that's the first symbol we guess.
Hackers know that E substitute for threes and A substitute for the at sign. We know that.
What, you're kidding? They know that.
Zero.
We invented it.
So every time I put a 1 instead of an L, like you will guess that?
It's in the standard list.
You were incepted into doing that.
Oh, my God. Yeah. It's
and what about capitalizing the first letter of my password?
Yep.
You are a wily man.
Capitalizing the first letter or camel casing, capitaling the first and then lowercase in the second and capitaling the third.
So, yeah, okay.
Like, those are all common patterns.
We're making fun of this, but how do you get around this? Because we're probably terrifying some people.
Before you go into that, keyboard walking. You've heard of keyboard walking?
Yes.
Like, you could see ASDF. A password that's like QWERTYUIOP, and you're like, oh, my God, that sounds awesome. It's like a 12-character password, and it's literally the first row of the keyboard. That's super common. There are password lists that are just keyboard patterns. So if you make a pattern on your keyboard, it is in a list up into, like, I don't know, 18 or 20 characters.
I mean, there's probably a few million of those combinations anyway. Yeah. So it's not that because of how we attack it. So how do you survive this? So it's, you know, we tell this, that's the bad news. The good news is it's pretty easy to get beyond this. One, you want to have long passwords. Long is better than complicated. It can be easy for you to type. It can be a song lyric. It can be, you know, whatever you want to be. But it's got to, the longer the better. And, you know, if you have a favorite band and a favorite song and it's not the number one song of all time, then you probably can find a good password, throw a little bit of entropy in there, and you're good. You can also delegate it and let a password manager, like 1Password or Bitwarden, handle it for you. And that's really where we advise people to go is that. But you have to also enable two-factor authentication, multi-factor authentication, everywhere you can as often as possible. Mm-hmm. It doesn't guarantee you're going to make it and not get hacked. But it's like the physical equivalent of wearing Kevlar body suits. You could still, somebody still take you out with a 50 cal, but it's going to take a 50 cal to take you out. And so I like to use that physical security analogy.
And there's probably, again, sometimes, many, many times, attackers are going to focus their efforts on what makes the most financial sense. And so if they can hack 10 people in the same time that it takes to hack you, they're going to go and hack those 10 people, and you're going to walk by. They didn't want to waste that 50 cal. You know?
They just went
for the one that didn't have any armor.
That's exactly right. You're not walking around looking down at your cell phone and ignoring the world. You're kind of got your head on a swivel. You're much less likely to get mugged. And so it does really equate. It doesn't have to be this hard, but you have to spend a modicum of time on a regular basis, updating your skills, updating your capabilities. You know, if you move into a neighborhood, you don't ignore it for 30 years and then suddenly find out you live in a bad neighborhood. You pay attention as there's broken windows, as there's, you know, abandoned lots, as there's, you know, street crime. You pay attention to that stuff. We need to do the same thing in the security world. But people don't know where to look.
We all live in a bad neighborhood.
We do.
The cyber internet. World. It's broken down lots everywhere and...
So one of the things there again is that a lot of people that we see have this tendency of being overwhelmed by the reality of, like, hey, you know, you live in a bad place. Like, you know, like, the internet is full of these scary monsters that are going to keep you up at night if you think about them. And so the easiest thing to do to live with it is just, you know, close your eyes. Right. So how do we help people to get over that and to find something that's kind of that's manageable?
Right.
It's incremental. You got to do incremental stuff.
Yeah. Go ahead, and I was going to say the same thing. It's the same thing with you know, let's say you're overweight and you want to get down to a healthy weight, and sometimes that seems overwhelming, right? Where I don't know how to get there, and working out is really hard, And the way you start is simple. You know, you start a little bit of exercise. Not, don't go run a marathon the first day, but, you know, start a little bit. And it's the same thing. It's just, it's small increments. Like, say this week, I'm going to go to every device I touch, whether it's my TV or my computer, and I'm going to turn on auto updates. I'm going to let it update whenever it should update, right? And I'm going to automatically tell it to turn on auto updates. And I could be in, chances are I'm not going to be in the middle of writing a Word document, you know, to Congress, and it reboots and I lose everything. It's not going to happen. Usually they're going to schedule it for night or whatever. So yeah, set it all to auto reboot and or auto patch. And at this point, you're going to be much more secure than most people. Take a password. And I like this advice. Patrick usually gives this advice. But when you log into a website with a password, like once a month, pick a password that you haven't, if you're using this password that you haven't changed in a long time, and just change that one. Don't go to all 300 accounts you have and change every password. Just change that one. And eventually what will happen is you'll have changed them all, right? And then start working around. So our advice is just start small, incremental, and you'll be better than most people.
How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time.
And taking the first bite is psychologically the hardest. Because,
that's right.
Because you're seeing the elephant. So maybe stop seeing the elephant. See the steak.
What people will find is if they get a password manager, it will make their life so much better and so much easier very soon. It's kind of like, I don't need a cell phone. I don't want a cell phone. Oh my God, cell phones are fantastic. Password managers are fantastic when they work well. You know, LastPass kind of sullied the market a little bit. Yeah. They made some mistakes and they kept making those mistakes. So we tried to give them more chances, but that doesn't mean we throw the baby out with the bathwater. Password managers will make your life better, and they are a big part of this.
Patrick. I think what he was going to say is password management is important.
Yes.
That's usually what...
That's what I said.
And I think, like, another thing that people should know is it's easy now, right? Like, you have a number of password managers. The even the default ones, the one that you get with Chrome, the one that you get with Apple, like, sure... A lot of people have gripes about them that are probably legitimate, but for 99% of the people that have nothing, it's going to be so much better, so much easier.
If you're on one system,
because you're going to use it.
If you're on one system and it's got a browser, Chrome keeps track of them. That's probably just one step below a dedicated password manager, but it's still very good. It's very easy to use.
And the only recommendation I would make, because I love it when people use Chrome and Edge to save their passwords. And the reason I love it is because if they don't turn on 2FA on your account, so if you don't turn on multi-factor authentication on your Google account, I will then log into your Google account and now I get all your passwords. Mm-hmm. So if you are going to use them, I think they're fantastic. And a lot of people ask me, like, oh, what about the browser password? And I'm like, they're great. Just make sure the account you're using, whether it's a Microsoft account because you're using Edge or is a That's Google account because you're using Chrome, have multi-factor authentication on it and a decent password on that account, and you're good. You're fantastic. There's very few exploits out there I know that can strip that password out.
And I think another thing there is that when you're putting all of these passwords, which many people will reuse the same kind of passwords on lots of different websites, on that one e-commerce website to buy like face socks or whatever you used once, your password is now there. And you're using the same one. The security there, compared to the security of your account, your Microsoft account, your Google account, which have super sophisticated teams, super sophisticated systems, in addition to 2FA, to tell you, hey, this looks suspicious. Those are resources that very few organizations in the world, right, aside from like governments, are able to have to help protect.
Yes.
To help protect you. So like put all of your eggs in the basket that's a tank.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah, tank exactly. Basket.
Yes.
And have them manage it for you. And they'll have all of the rest. And
I think a
key thing that we touched on here is, for me, what I try to tell people is you need to do stuff that's more manageable. Stop thinking about the theory. Because the theory of saying you need to change your password every 3 months. It targets a very specific risk. But the reality is the behavior that comes from trying to tackle that risk opens up an even larger risk.
Yeah, it
does. And so in theory, if applied perfectly, yes, you should.
Right.
But you're not going to apply it perfectly, so yep. please don't.
So we have a couple of policies that are unique to our company, I think. I mean, we've talked about them, so maybe people have copied. I hope they do. One, we make it a policy in the company that the passwords you use at the company belong to the company and they're not allowed to be used anywhere else.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And you can be fired for that. Now, we've never fired anybody that, and we're probably never going to. But the fact that we're willing to say that wakes people up and makes them think, okay, I can't use this same password over here for my cornerhardwarestore.com. Because password reuse. First thing we'd do if we were coming after you, Raphael, we'd do a dark web search to see what passwords you have and where you've been breached. Mm-hmm. And so if you were using LinkedIn and you had a password on LinkedIn, we had a guy who his password was Dragon, and he used some version of Dragon everywhere. And mm-hmm. we found six different examples. So when we went to his account, it was like, well, let's try Dragon 123. Oh, that worked. Great. We're in. And so it was literally like that easy. So... Yeah. So that's the first thing. Second thing is we allow people to have really long passwords, and if they have a password that's 20 characters and MFA, multi-factor authentication for an account, they never have to change it. Now, if we get notice from our looking at logs and seeing things that somebody's going after that account, we might make them change it. But that's not the same as you've got to change it because... We're just going to torture you.
Because there's a hypothetical threat.
Right.
You need to say.
Right. Yeah. Right. But we do check those logs. And that's another thing is there's all sorts of logging that occurs. Now, this is a higher level of game for companies. It's not really a personal thing. Though you could set up your own security operations center if you wanted to in your personal life. But if you have a company with devices that generate security logs, which most of them do, and if you have any systems at all, they do. Then if you're not looking at those logs or having someone look at those logs, it's a wasted opportunity because there are people trying to get through that wall all the time. And if you don't pour some boiling oil on them every once in a while, they're going to get through. And so don't you love the military analogy?
I know, right? Yeah. Wow. We're going medieval military.
We've gone medieval
the
on them, yes.
It's impressive. It's impressive.
We can regain common sense, but it takes... You know, it takes a lot of thinking to get to that point. And like you said, the first step is the hardest.
Yeah.
We'll have to do another episode on medieval analogies to cybersecurity. I love it, and I find that the physical nature of it, and maybe that's maybe this is specific to nerds that like thinking about the different levels of protection in a fortress and et cetera. It makes it
real
in a way that people can get it more than this nebulous, and also there's this fear that you often get of like, oh my God, I got hacked. It's like the world is ending. And the reality is, come on, everyone is going to get hacked.
Oh yeah.
It's not a matter of if you're going to get hacked. It's if you get hacked, did somebody steal a dollar or two from the bowl in your entrance, right? Yeah. Or a candy at Halloween.
Or did they burn your house down?
Yeah. And then run away with all of your life savings, right? Like,
and salt your garden.
So it's more like, oh, that's just nasty.
I know. That's just delightful.
Yeah.
You said medieval. I'm going medieval.
Know, right? Yeah, yeah. Wow. Fair enough.
So I had something to say. I got something to add. So I have been recently under full-on identity theft attack on an ongoing for about 6 months. And I kind of enjoy it because they get nothing. They get nothing.
I kind of enjoy it.
Well, because when I notice that I look at my accounts, I have my credit monitored. I've frozen all my credit at all the credit bureaus. I have passwords, that I have to give in order to access all my accounts at the different banks. And so they'll social engineer a bank and convince them that they don't need the password or something, and then they'll get a credit card sent, and I'll stop it right away. So I've stopped a lot of attempts, and I'm wasting a lot of their time. They're not getting any money out of me. Well, now they're not going after your grandmother and your uncle, So that's good. But
and it's diminishing returns.
It is, yeah. They're not getting anything, but I'm getting good content for presentations. Like, this is how you shut off your – this is how you freeze your accounts and things like that.
Right.
But, again, there's lots of things that you – that's something I think people should look into is the biggest threat is identity theft for them, because if they lose their computers, if their bank gets hacked into, that could be really bad. But most people don't have $100 million sitting around to get stolen, and so they can recover. Yeah. But if their identity gets stolen, it can be much more critical. And so things like freezing your bank, your credit. It's credit. Inconvenient if you want to open a credit card, but that's what makes it secure.
Right.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm broaching new topics at end of the podcast.
We'll have to do another one on that again.
And happy to do that.
And I have stories of my grandparents and how they got kind of social engineered and.
Yep.
Money stolen, stuff like that. And I'm sure everybody, everybody has a story of someone they know well and how that happened. And unfortunately, it's often people that are the most vulnerable.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's true.
The one that has $100 million in their bank account is probably going to have some decent security behind it.
Yeah. Right?
And some government's going to bail them out. Some government's going to bail them out.
And probably some government's going to bail them out. Great. Well, we're coming to the end of the podcast. Thank you so much for coming on. This was great fun, very insightful, and I hope just as interesting to everybody that's listening to us. To those listening to the podcast, thank you for tuning in. Once again, this is the Ask Us Izzo podcast, and this is Raphael signing off. Thanks, Patrick. Thanks, Dwayne.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.